Hello and welcome to Knights of the Hardcover, a podcast dedicated to discussing and summarizing fantasy books, their lore, and all of the things we love about them. My name is Brandon Castle, Jarl of the West Coast, and joining me on the journey down the River Dremir are Chris, don't call me a Kniving Lower.
Thanks, Brandon. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy as a humping Prince Hacken right now.
Oh, that is happy. We got to watch out. And recently back from recovery after having a Herndon inserted into his arm, we have Zach Mysick.
Hey, everyone. I'm not clever enough to think of a cool intro.
Nice. Call yourself out. Good. Well, today we are here covering the first half of John Gwynn's second book of the Bloodsworn series, Hunger of the Gods. If you haven't read the first book or are a bit spotty on the details, check out our first podcast covering book one, Shadow of the Gods, where we give a full recap of everything that happened in the introductory book. But like I said earlier, due to the dense nature of these books, we are splitting Hunger of the Gods podcast into two parts. Today, we are covering up through chapter 35 or page 320, for those of you following along at home. First, we're just going to start off with a brief summary of what happened for each one of these storylines. We had a couple new characters introduced here, so we're going to give a quick rundown of what happened in each one of those storylines, and then give our feelings and thoughts about what happened in that. So first, we're going to start off here with Orca.
All right, so I got Orca here. Basically, the book left off with Orca, Mord, and Lif. Mord had just died in the last skirmish that they got into. And so there, it starts with Orca and Lif burying Mord. She's with the Bloodsworn at this point, and they want to know why she left, the Bloodsworn. And she tells them, look, I was done fighting. They were kind of mad about it, but they all seem to be okay with it in the end. All the Bloodsworn dream about the fact that Leek Rafa is back, and Spurt and Vesely, Orca's scary little companions, confirm that to be true. Then Glornir basically invites Orca back into the Bloodsworn, but she says, no, I got to find my son. And Glornir says, I'd help you, but I got to go find Vol. So Orca and Glornir go their separate ways, but Glornir sends a couple Bloodsworn with Orca and Lif on her journey to go find her son Brekka. They go to Rada's chamber, which is a lead that they got from the Bloodsworn. She finds signs of Brekka in Rada's chamber. She also found some other important documents and spells. Basically, when they leave the chamber, they run into the Raven Feeders and Merc, who is Bjor's boyfriend. We'll kind of get to more of that later. But they fight the Raven Feeders, and they kill every single one of the Raven Feeders except for Merc, who they capture. Merc really wants to know who killed her father, who is the dragonborn from the last book. Spoiler alert, it was Varg that killed him, but they don't tell Merc that yet because Orca wants to know where her son is. They get a lead, and some of the Bloodsworn leave. Hala, Gunnar, and Revna are going to join the search for Brekka, so they're sticking around with Orca because they like her quite a bit. They learn that Leek Rafa is heading to the Iskalk Islands. And eventually, after Orca basically absolutely bloodies Merc and she pokes her eye out, and Merc kind of likes it for some reason. It's really weird. But Merc tells them, she basically gives them that lead about the Iskalk Islands. And they tell Merc that Varg killed her father. They throw Varg under the bus for some reason. That's kind of where we leave off with Orca.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but Merc definitely sounds like my kind of lady. She is a sick bastard. Gotta have them a little crazy, though. You know, I like my women a little crazy, so that's always
good. She's definitely crazy, yeah.
That's going to be kind of a running theme through a lot of this book is these tainted not being able to control their powers when they get really emotional, which brings us into Varg and his storyline here. So we start off with Varg at the Grimholt with the Bloodsworn. The last we saw them, they came up on Orca after she had that whole massacre of everyone that was at the Grimholt and saved the children. So they're there cleaning up the mess from that. Everyone's extraordinarily scared of Orca's skull splitter and kind of keep their space from her, but it's nice to have Bloodsworn and Orca back together. They're enjoying their time together. Orca has a lead on Skalk and said that he was heading to Darl, so that the Bloodsworn need to head there. On their way there, they stop by a village that Varg and a few of the others are scouting out. They see it's full of thralls, which, if you don't remember, Varg used to be a thrall himself, and he actually remembers and knows one of them. Her name was Turna. She gives him the down low on what happened with Froya last time she saw her, which he was sold to, or she was sold to a man named Brimmel. And then after they kind of get the down low, Varg has his first lead on his sister. Then they see a bunch of dragon worshippers that are yelling in the time or in the town square and spreading the word of the dragon returning and trying to get people to their cause and join the cause of the dragons. And so there's a big confrontation that breaks out because the Varg and the Bloodsworn don't like that, obviously. It's kind of a bloody massacre, and Varg kills a couple of them. And then the Bloodsworn also through that find out that Guthfar has been through the village, and so they know they're on the right track and can pass that along. Varg's having some trouble controlling the wolf inside of him, which we saw in that fight, and we'll see a few other times throughout. He's trying to harness it, but when he gets really emotional or anything basically with his sister, he really just, the wolf comes out of him and he lashes out and usually kills somebody. So the rest of the journey happens. The Bloodsworn reach Darl. Their plan is to attack the Galdr Tower, which is where all the Galdrmen are trained. And we'll see in a later one, there's all kinds of creepy shit in there. But so they plan to attack the Galdr Tower and save Vol from there. They heard fighting. They were supposed to wait for Glurnir's thumbs up, but they hear some fighting, and so they start to go in anyways, and they see that Jeremir is attacking. Jeremir, if you remember from the last one, was the prince that confronted the Bloodsworn. Varg sees Jokul get killed by Guthfar, which obviously pisses him off, so he starts chasing after him with a couple of the Bloodsworn into the tower. They follow him all the way to Elka's chamber, but on the way there, they also find Prince Haken with his pants around his ankles.
Hey, humping.
He's humping. Having a good time. It is. They make it very known that he was humping. They say that a few times in there, but so they find him on the way in. They make it all the way to Helka's chambers. Fight breaks out because all of Helka's dregers and her, I don't know the word for it, but her wolfborn, the Uthaf, whatever, the wolfborn are there too, so big fight breaks out. They all start fighting. Rokia takes Haken prisoner, and they strike a deal with Helka. Basically, the deal is, Jeremir stole a bunch of shit from me. You go get him and bring him back. I'll give you a boat. I'll give you a chest of silver. You're free men. As long as you get him, kill him, or bring him back, we're all square. Before they leave to go do that, Varg and a few others go to the kind of thrall marketplace and find Brimmel there and interrogate him. They find out that Froya was sold to another slaver called Brack Trollbrain. They also find out that this guy Brimmel used to rape Froya as well, and she was kind of his plaything. And so once again, Varg loses it on this guy, and they all start fighting. There, you know, people come in to help him out. They kill him essentially. But they saw the wolf in Varg's eyes, so they have to kill everybody there. They go after, or so then they leave there. The Bloodsworn are going after Jeremir to get back Vol. And so then they get that reward. They hop on a boat. They head out with one of Helka's wolf guardians. And then we also find out that the Bloodsworn had the group of children that were captured. They had a group of these children that are tainted still. And it turns out the Einar snuck a bunch of the children on in food barrels. So they're going to be coming along the journey too. So it's a bit of a hostile, but fun environment on the blood or on the Bloodsworn boat.
A fun thing to add is that Einar is just like so good with these kids, these tainted children. They love him. He's, you know, he's a gentle giant. Just kind of, you know, like, no offense to him, but like just kind of dumb enough to get along with these kids pretty much full time. So he's a great babysitter.
Yeah. And they have some good storytellers on the boat too. So they kind of tell a story at the end that makes that wolf soldier feel bad about what he does. And he like feels like he's betrayed the tainted. So might see a turn of heart coming on the second half of the book. We'll see.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the next storyline of Elvar.
Yeah, and her story picks up right when Leek Rifa and her children escape. Her and the Battlegrim then start kind of looting the place, look for any valuable possessions. It's then she kind of realizes that she has to fulfill the blood oath that she made, and kind of come clean to the rest of the Battle Grim about that blood oath. She then puts a collar
on... I'm going to cut in real quick. They try for a second to think about not fulfilling the blood oath, and their blood starts boiling. So it's not really a choice. Like, they have to do it.
There's no way to hide from this blood oath.
Yeah, it knows what you're thinking. Sorry to interrupt.
No problem. Yeah, pretty horrifying. They then put a collar, a thrall collar on Scud. Is that how you pronounce the god's
Skald.
Name?
Skald.
Skald. Then they put a thrall collar on Skald. They then go into Likrifa's like chambers where she has been this whole time. This is where they like find the soul road and they see like the souls going through it. They have to break into some ruins and fight Likrifa's guards. Is then they find that magical spell book, the Goldra book. Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah. Goldrabach.
Goldrabach. This is when they realize that in order to fight a god, like they need a god, and they have a plan to reanimate Ulfur. They have this plan to resurrect him, but they need to create like a big enough thrall collar to enslave him, which they end up doing. They revive him. He hates this new state of the world where everything's like upside down. The people who have the blood of the gods are now slaves. They do try to make it to the Usun Bridge so they can head back and battle Likrifa, but it is taken down, so they need him to bring that bridge back, which he does. They run into a bunch of Vaesen, which causes Leafrika to know that her brother is still alive. The Balgrim camp has some disagreements about who should lead them going forward, since their leader died in the previous book, and they hold an Aethling. Elvar and Hood battle it out to see who will lead, and Elvar ends up killing Hood, becoming the new leader.
Yeah, and she does it in kind of like a tricky way, too. She fakes an injury so that Hold underestimates her, and then the last second uses her bad shoulder and kills her in a pretty brutal fashion. So good for Elvar.
Pretty quick fight. Yeah. Pretty quick fight. She made quick work of her. Wasn't really close. And even though she faked an injury, but she was also actually injured. You know, she just kind of played into that.
Yeah. Everyone knew she was injured, but she played it up. She hustled. Yeah. Nothing. You can't say anything about Elvar, but she's a hustler for sure. So yeah, that wraps up Elvar's story there. Next we'll do Guthvar. This one ties in pretty closely with Varg towards the end, but we can hit some of the early stuff here. Guthvar, when we come upon him, he had just fled the fight at the Grimholt. He's one of the few survivors from that fight, and so he's feeling really guilty about fleeing that. He thinks he's a coward. We get a lot of internal dialogue with Guthvar of how he feels about that whole battle and how he feels about himself.
Almost split personality stuff.
Yeah.
From Guthvar.
Everything he says is the opposite of what he's actually thinking, it seems like. And so he's really tossed in with his own personality and his own worth to the world. He's scared of facing his aunt again because he didn't kill our Orca and fled from the battle. And so he arrives in Darl with Vol and Skulk on board. Skulk no longer has his staff, which will kind of be important later. They meet with Helka, Haken, and Jeremir, where Guthvar reveals that they found Orna's missing talon, which they don't really go too into it, but you kind of get the idea is a really big deal in Darl because Orna's skeleton covers the entire city. So that missing talon was an important thing. They also have a copy of the Radskinna from Radha's chamber. They give him an assignment. Helka and Skulk give Guthvar an assignment to get close to Haken because they know he's been up to no good, up to something behind the scenes. They just don't know what. So they assign him to get close to him so that he can spy on Haken. Skulk leads Guthvar into the Galdr Tower, which, let me tell you, is full of some weird shit. I mean, there's bodies in barrels. There is, like, animals all over. There's wasps flying around. There's Froa spirits in the water. Like, it's like a house of terror in there.
Nasty.
Yeah, just nothing good happens in there. Guthvar is really uncomfortable. He doesn't really know why he's there, but Skulk keeps leading him down corridors and corridors and corridors. And then finally he finds out he gets strapped to a table and they start putting what it's called a Hernder into his body, which is basically a wasp that its sting can essentially kill you. And so it digs into his body and it rests next to his heart so that if he stops spying on Hacken or betrays Skulk or whatever, this thing will just immediately kill him. So while he's recovering from that ad hoc surgery, Jaromir starts attacking the tower, which we kind of see it from Varg's perspective too. He ends up, you know, he makes short work of all the Galdermen because he brings some seer witches that are very powerful with him. They take Vol and this chest of god items and spells. It contained the bones of the god Hraeg. And so that was all from Rada's chamber. They take that with them. And in that whole process, Guthvar kills one of the Bloodsworn in all of the chaos that's happening. And Varg sees that. It's one of Varg's closest friends. What's his name? Talco?
I don't remember.
Well, we talked about it in Varg. So Varg sees him kill that person, starts chasing him into the tower. In there, Guthvar is going to report that there's an attack happening to Helka. While escaping, he finds the bodies of some of the people that were at the Grimholt stuffed in some barrels on his way out. So I imagine that's going to come back around because there's some weird stuff happening in the Galdur Tower. During the whole confrontation where Hacken is prisoner, he's also naked because, like we said earlier, he was humping. Guthvar finds the opportunity to start befriending Hacken. Skulk has a new staff made of this dead Froa spirit after all of the battle happens. And then Guthvar goes to his aunt Jarl Sigrun to basically ask for help with his task, but mostly he just goes to cry on her shoulder because that's exactly what he does. So that is Guthvar's story so far.
Guthvar. Huge bitch. A complete coward. One of those characters.
But yeah, I think what was interesting is the first book you really like start to hate Guthvar and just think he's this like big asshole who's strong and powerful and uses that power against people. But this, you just start to pity him. Like you realize he has no self-confidence. He has a really weird internal dialogue and he's really kind of worthless in a battle. So
yeah,
like the only kill he has is from behind, gets the guy in the back. So, not my favorite character, but we'll see. We'll see where he goes.
Yeah.
All right. The last one we have is Beor.
Beor. Yes. So Beor, another new POV chapter, just like Guthvar is a new POV chapter. The last thing we really saw Beor do was kill the leader of the Battle Grim. And then Lycroffa gets freed and he runs off with the Raven Feeders. Turns out that Beor has been with the Raven Feeders basically his entire life. And he feels like basically they're his family. But he's still feeling conflicted about betraying Elvar and the Battle Grim. And he thought that he killed the leader of the Battle Grim in like a really cowardly way. So he doesn't feel good about that. But he goes back and a lot of his chapters is basically just feeling conflicted and not knowing where to go and what to do. But he has a girlfriend in the Raven Feeders, Merk, who Orca absolutely, you know, savages in her chapters, Ilska's sister. They bang, you know, they're good friends.
I think you're underselling that. They don't just bang. They make sweet, hard, passionate love. Holy cow. The whole camp's talking about it. It's the gossip of the town.
Oh, yeah. You know, Beor, legendarily, he definitely fucks. People always hear it, apparently. So
hey. I'd put him in God tier fucker. I mean, it sounds God like
he's in Podrick Payne category.
Well, I don't know about that, but
yeah. So all of the children that helped free Lycroffa against their will are still with the Raven Feeders. Some of them haven't recovered from the spell that was used to control them. They're just kind of like in a general malaise and not quite back to normal. Merk has to leave to go find her father who was killed by Varg. And, you know, that's when she runs into Orca and Orca's chapters. But basically, near the end of Bjorn's chapters, Leek Rafa essentially gathers everyone around, and she talks about how Ulfir has reborn, her Vaesen come back, and she's like, yay, my children are back. She removes all of the collars from the children because she doesn't want them to be thralls, and she kind of coaches them up. She teaches them how to identify the gods' blood in themselves. She tells them that their parents have been lying to them their entire lives. They shouldn't be ashamed of the fact that they're tainted. She doesn't like the word tainted or anything like that. She says that they're special and they're going to rule the world as her children. Brekka, who is Orca's son, is with these children, and he identifies wolf and bear blood in his, he has wolf and bear, which is rare. It's not rare to have both. And so they kind of comment that that's going to be a big deal later. Bjorn is also there. He identifies bear blood, and he is also, he's kind of listening to Leek Rafa. He doesn't hate what she has to say. And that'll probably come into play later. And then the Vaesen at the last thing that really happens here is they confirm that Ulfir has crossed the Isbun Bridge. So that's probably going to be Leek Rafa's new focus.
Cool. And that is the first half of Hunger of the Gods. Through this, we didn't get the download of lore that we got kind of in that first book, but we did get a few additions to the lore that we know so far. I'm getting the sense that they're really setting up for the second half to give us a really big download. But a few things that we did learn. Snaka, who is largely regarded as the maker of all gods, maker of all people, he had a sister called Skugga, horrible name, but it's called Skugga the Unmaker. So where Snaka made everything, Skugga unmakes things. We don't know what that means exactly, but I have a feeling we're going to find out in the second half.
It makes you wonder, too, if those two snakes have some sort of parents as well that might come into play.
Yeah, that's a good thought, too. Actually, do we know that Skugga is she a snake? Do we know that? I mean, I assume so, but like, I guess we don't know.
Yeah,
that.
Maybe not.
We know nothing basically except that she's called the Unmaker. So
yeah.
We also learn a bit about why Leek Rafa was in that prison, and it turns out that she had been for a while using dead souls to make the Vaesen, and she had been planning this entire time to create an army to kill all of the gods, and I believe it was Orna. Orna found out about that and entrapped her in there when she was going to make more Vaesen. That's how they lured her into that cage and trapped her there. So we learned about that chamber and why Leek Rafa was there in the first place and how the Vaesen exists and why they're in the world now too. Do you guys want to talk about Rada's chamber?
Yeah. Well, I would add too that the reason the eagle god was able to lure Leek Rafa in there by being like, this is the trail of souls, or this is where the souls pass through. And she knew that Leek Rafa would want, Leek Rafa's perverted enough that she would like be really interested in that. That's kind of how she got her in there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. She didn't know that's where the soul road was until Orna told her. That's correct. Yep. She'd been working on the spells to create the Vaesen, but she didn't have the souls to do it. That's what it was. Yeah.
And we learned about some new gods like the boar god, fox god, and it's inferred that there's a lot of other gods out there too. And we also learned that gods can be reanimated. We already talked about how they brought back Ulfir. It's actually one of the first things in the book. So gods can be reanimated, so they're all dead. It really doesn't matter. It seems like if they can find their bones, they can bring them back.
And that scene was very cool too. The like reanimation of Ulfir. I mean, they they had the seer witch. It was Upsa that was leading the Battlegrim, and all of them had like kind of cut their hands and put blood to it, and then the body started kind of weaving together. It reminded me a lot of Westworld and the intro to Westworld when they're kind of creating the bodies and how they're made. That was definitely what I had in mind. So I thought that was a really cool scene.
Oh, nice! I like that.
Yeah, and the last thing we kind of learned was Rada's chamber, which was a big part of the last book and early on in this book. Rada's chamber was a hideout that Rada was using after he killed Valkyrie, which was the daughter of Orna and Ulfir. But he blamed that death on Leek Rifa, which naturally pissed off basically everyone involved. So he ran, he was on the run to this chamber, and he hid out there for a while and was the one that created the Skaldrabok. And he actually wrote that on Skald's sister's skin, which is wild. I don't know how he got that much skin, but he did. Yeah. And so we see in the book, like, Skald's all upset when they're holding the book, obviously, because of that.
Do you think he, like, you know, they're gods, maybe they heal fast? Do you think they, you know, cuts off a piece of her chest and it'll heal in a day or so, and then he cuts off another piece and something like that?
Yeah,
I don't probably. Seem to be that big.
Every time he needs a new page, he just goes to the Skald sister's room and okay. Gross. All right. And then they eventually found him, chained him up inside that chamber, and they dripped Vasen poison on him for like decades. But he escaped, which kind of leaves open. We never really got clarification, but I think Rada's still alive, correct? We never saw Rada's bones. We never heard of his death.
Well,
I think he's still alive and out there.
It's implied that all the gods are dead. But Rada, you know, just like Peter Pettigrew, would be the god that survives and hides for 300 years, I would say.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's what they were implying in the book, was that he escaped and then no one knows where he went after that. But
okay.
I assume we'll find out about that. So,
well, and we don't hear about any tainted with Rada's blood, or at least I don't remember any tainted with Rada's blood. So maybe he's got a whole crew of fucking disgusting ass rat people that just chill in the shadows or something.
I believe they did mention one last book. There was one guy that had Rada's blood, but he was not a main character, so I don't remember much about him.
Yeah.
We also got a few new creatures in this one. Just wanted to run through those real quick. We got the Night Hags. These things attack in the middle of the night for the Bloodsworn. We don't learn much about them, but they sounded really gross in the explanation. I assume it's similar to nightworms, but just more of like a grub, which is pretty gross. And then we also get a couple more.
My favorite's definitely the one that burrows into your skin and like nestles by your heart.
The Hernder.
Yeah, that one, so creepy. You described it as like a wasp. I was kind of thinking of it as spurt, but small, you know, but just absolutely disgusting and creepy and perfect for this book.
Yeah, and one thing we didn't mention either was like, the whole point of them burrowing is to lay eggs. Like, that's their thing, is they have a really powerful sting, but they also burrow into your skin, lay their eggs, and then their eggs just kind of burst out of your body. So
yeah,
that's also disgusting.
And and that's definitely happening to Guthfar too. Like, he thinks that he just has to do whatever Skulk says and the thing will burrow out. No chance that thing ever burrows out of Guthfar. Not even close to a chance.
Yeah, no way. And then we also learn about they call them hedge pigs too. They don't really describe them, but they mention them several times. A hedge pig. I think it's just a pig that lives in the forest. But that was mentioned. And then also the Faunir, which was found in the Galdur Tower. It was like a moss covered earthy creature that had like tentacles and vines coming off of it and all kinds of weird stuff. It was in a cage and Guthfar was very scared of it. So,
Zach, what was your favorite new creature?
It'd definitely be that bug that burrows into someone's skin. You can control them. I think that's kind of really messed up.
It's crazy.
Messed up device. It's kind of like medieval when you compare it to like a thrall collar or like the blood oath.
Yeah.
I feel like that one's kind of like a more medieval-y, torture-y one, even though those other ones are pretty messed up too.
It's pretty wild that you can like train it too. Like, you can train it to do what you want, and so that's not my favorite.
You wonder what its motivation is, you know. But
lay eggs, I assume. I don't know.
Yeah, true.
And then the night hags mentioned earlier, they're basically like mist/vine monsters, and they kill people by strangling them with rope like hair. So
ugh.
that's something to consider too. Basically, every creature in this book is the grossest thing I've ever heard of, and that streak continues. So
yeah, definitely.
Don't disappoint. Well, that's a good summary of the first part. The next podcast will go over the second part, but we did want to cover, you know, a few questions that we had, a few discussion points we had from the first half of the book here. So, Zach, why don't you take us off with the first one?
Okay, let's see. So we're starting off with Mary Fuck Kill, or do you want to go into something else?
Yeah, I'll start with Fuck Mary Kill. See what happens. Sorry, Hump Mary Kill.
Yeah, Hump Mary Kill.
Yeah.
Elvar. Okay, wow. Okay, Elvar, Mark, Queen Helka. Okay, wow. I didn't realize these were the options.
And this is Merc. This is Merc before she gets her eyes gouged out by Orca and face, you know, pounded in. So
can mine be after she has those things? I got some weird kinks I'd like to work out with Merc. So
okay. I have my answer.
What do you got?
You kill Merc. I think she's way too psycho. And then I think you
bad marry.
Then you marry Queen Helka. Because she's a quick queen, and I feel like you can just like relax in that tower. You don't have to do much.
Just in it for the money.
Yep, she'll be in charge of everything. You can wear a cool gold bracelet that she gives you. She wants to be making all the moves. That's fine. And then I think you have to help hump Elvar. Because Boar, who already has a steady side piece in Merc, humped Elvar a couple times, and he's still thinking about her, even though she's the enemy.
Yeah.
So she must have something going on there. And then also, too, she seems like she really hates the idea of marriage, so it'd really bum me out if if I married her and she just hated it.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Queen Helka, you gotta marry her. I mean, that's just, you got a chance to become a king or a prince, you kind of take the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, I'm totally fucking Merc. I am weirdly attracted to her. She's the worst character. She is gruesome and just the all around worst. But man, I'd like to take a ride.
You're fucking her. You're not marrying her.
No, I'm fucking her. Marrying Queen Helka, Elvar. We can kill her. That's fine. You could tell.
Girl.
You could tell that Bjor was doing all the work. So that's why the sex was so good.
I like this. I feel like we all have different answers because I definitely kill Queen Helka. You guys think you just marry Queen Helka and hang out? There's a reason she doesn't have a husband right now, and it's because she's insane. She's got Skulk running around all the time. I wouldn't want to be 100 feet from Skulk, so I definitely kill Queen Helka and never look back. I'd fuck Merc because, like BJ said, she's got something. She's got something about her.
I legitimately don't see what you guys see. And the fact that Boar has been with both ladies, but still thinks about Elvar, the enemy, more than his girlfriend, Merc, I think that just tells you everything you need to know.
Hey, all
that's
I gotta
why you
say,
marry Elvar. That's why you marry Elvar. It's simple as that. Easy.
Bjor essentially betrayed a guy that he really trusted in Agnar for Merc, like solely for Merc, and then came back. So as good as Elvar was, I know he's still thinking about it, but he did come back to Merc in the end.
Yeah. Well, then our next one is Varg, Bjor, and Grend. I got to say, I feel like this one's easy. You marry Grend, you fuck Bjor, and you kill Varg.
I got to agree with that. I mean, you have to marry Grend. He's so loyal and just an all-around sweetheart. And Bjor, I mean, I think we've touched on that, but hell yeah.
Yeah. What about our original three POV characters?
So Elvar, Orca, Varg?
And Varg, yeah.
You're killing Varg, just like last time. Marry Orca, fuck Elvar.
Yeah, right. That was pretty easy.
I'm fucking Orca. Are you kidding me?
Marry Elvar?
I'll marry Elvar. She seems nice. Yeah. She's considerate. Yeah. She's leader of the Battle Grim. I mean, she's got some fame now. She's got some battle fame now.
I need Orca for her protection, you know? She can keep me safe.
I don't know if I want to leave keep her around now, though. Now that she's on this like Batman revenge tour, I don't know if I want her in my bedroom every night.
Well, if you're dead, then she's gonna do that. If you're alive, she'll just be with you.
Yeah. Don't you want her to protect your child?
Good point. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. I'm still fucking Orca. All right, let's move on. We'll just ask some random. We'll call this a mailbag for all our listeners. what was your favorite scene from this half of the book?
Mine was. I think it was Orca. Orca was with Lif. They were kind of hiding, but they could see the Raven feeders, I believe. And they were way outnumbered, and Orca essentially just stepped out of the bushes. She's like, all right, let's go. Like, we're just going to kill them all. And Lif's like, you're kidding me. She's just so badass. You know, she just does shit like that all the time. So, and then, of course, she killed everybody, too. So, with the help of the Bloodsworn. But
the fact that Lif is continuously surprised about how daring she is, it's like, man, she's done this like 35 times already. You think you'd be used to it by this point. She kills, I mean, as long as there's no more than like 20 there, she's going to attack everybody. So even if there's over 20, she still might.
Yeah.
What about you, Zach?
For me, it was Elvar's last chapter when Ulfar, the wolf god, he like eats one of her crew members, and then she just kind of goes berserk on him. I thought that was like the coolest part of the book, because she's like, you have to obey me, you wolf god, you know, don't eat any of my crew. And then her son, the god's daughter, Skuld, was like trying to get the wolf god to like kneel, and then Elvar's like, even like, Skuld, like, kneel before me. And then she's like, you and your daughter, like, you're mine. Skuld, gouge out one of your own eyes. Like, it was just like a really intense like scene. And I thought Elvar really like, put those two gods like in their place. Like, it was really,
yeah, really great cool. Pick. She is pretty fearless.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she's pretty OP now. She has thrall colors on two gods.
True. True.
Yeah. They are, they're stacked right now. I mean, two gods on your side, but I mean, the way they described Ulfir, it really, I mean, we don't know what his powers are yet, but it seems like he's going to be no match for Lykrifa at this point, because Lykrifa is a freaking dragon. So I don't know. We'll see. And the Dragonborn seem to be pretty OP as well with all of their talents. So also, I guess we didn't even touch on this, but I believe it was Ilska was a dragonborn and could use seer magic. Was that Merc or was that Ilska?
Merc
can use that. We'd never seen that before, so that was really interesting. I thought that was just like a thing that dragonborn people could do, is just do fire wheels or something, but it was cool to see that you could have magic and be tainted.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do my favorite scene was when Guthfar was going with Skald into the Golder Tower, just because I love like the mystery and the kind of download of creatures and what the Golder people or Golder men and women are actually doing was really interesting. All throughout the first book, they talked about the mysteries of the Golder men, and we never really saw that. So to see it firsthand and see all the weird shit that they were up to in that tower was intriguing to me.
Pretty evil stuff, it seems like.
I love a mad scientist character, though, so I'm in on it.
Skulk is a good character. I like him as a character. What about most gruesome death or most gruesome kill? You guys got anything for that?
I mean, getting eaten by Ulfur probably wasn't great. That guy just got snarfed down. Like, he just, wow.
They kind of just moved on, too.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, it happens.
Elvar was like, hey, if you could not do that again, that'd be great. But, like, we'll forgive you this one time. Just kind of like, all right.
Yeah, it's funny that so far, the two children of Snaka both like to eat their quote unquote children, just like Snaka did.
Yeah.
It's like a habit that they both have to try to kill.
I think the gods are just used to being able to do whatever they want, so this is a new territory for them.
Yeah. Mine wasn't like an on scene death, but I'm blanking on their name. But it was that woman that was shoved in the barrel. Or that they found in the barrel. Like, she's clearly tortured and
Allred.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was kind of confused because I kind of wanted to talk about that with you guys. Why did she die? Because she was one of, she wasn't like Queen Helka's person. Because that Queen Helka's person, I guess, wasn't even there. I was kind of confused on why she was the one that got put in the barrel and not the prince's person.
Yes, is just because.
Because she was Jarl. Yeah, but she was Jarl Seagram's person. I understand why he imprisoned the prince's person, because they found out that that the prince was working with the Raven people.
Well, they probably don't want Jarl Seagram to know anything about what's going on.
That could be it.
Be my guess. But I was confused on why. And Skull can like do some tests on them as well.
Yeah, I guess that kind of makes sense. Like, I understood why that you had to kill the prince's people or isolate them, but I was kind of confused on why this random Jarl's people had to be killed.
Yeah.
It wasn't just Arlds, though. It was like a lot of people were in barrels, apparently. So Arlds was in there, but I don't know. There was several others too. So I assume it's just they're going to use them for some magical spell or something. They need a full body for it or something like that. So just kind of
in general, showing how dastardly Skulk and Helka are. I think I'm going to pick for my most gruesome death. I'll go with, I believe Spurt got somebody with his tail, and it just sent like general black veins and shit through his body, and just seemed really painful. You know, Spurt's always been really creepy, and you get to see what his stinger does, and it's pretty nasty stuff. Don't like it.
Spurt and Vesely are pretty powerful beings. We kind of see. I mean, Vesely was healing everybody up with her spit glob goo stuff. Yeah, and Spurt's able.
I love how Vesely
people.
Carries a spear too. She's got a little spear. Flying around with a spear. Oh.
Yeah. I do have a bonus one for the lamest death.
Okay.
And it was in Goosefar. It was in his like first chapter. It was like when they're rowing the boats and it's like pretty jam tight. Like it's really like elbow to elbow. Can't really move around. And there's that guy who was like weak on the floor, but like still alive. And he's like goes up to him, says that he's dead. Then like has him thrown over the edge so he can like drown, so he can have like a little bit more elbow room. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, I guess I forgot that Goosefar had two kills. One, he killed the guy in the back, and two, he shoved a dead or already dead guy off a boat.
Goosefar sucks, man. He sucks.
I loved his chapters. I thought he was so funny. It's like the way he was written and his internal monologue and how tough he talked, like in his head, but he wasn't. I really enjoyed any of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
He seemed like a real character, like a real person.
I loved these. The two new additions was great. It's probably one of like the highlights of this book for me. New POVs.
Yeah.
That was going to be one of my questions, was how you guys felt. I mean, at first when I came in and saw there's five POVs, I was a little disappointed because there's already a lot to follow. But what did you guys think now that we're halfway through of having five perspectives?
I liked it. I was happy. I was happy to see the new POV chapters. I think it's nice to see what Lycroft is doing from Bjor's perspective. And like you said, Zach Goodfar, he's just such a sniveling brat, you know, and he's well written. And just the fact that he thinks one thing and does the opposite every single time. I thought they added to the story.
I agree. And it was cool to see someone inside the Raven Feeders too. I think that was kind of necessary to understand like what they were about and what they were doing at all times. So,
especially a character who has spent time with both sides and he's like still kind of conflicted about it. And he can spy on the dragon, or we can like see the dragon through his eyes, and then we can even see Orca's son too. But I really like these two. I honestly, I like these two characters' plot lines so far, or story, more than Orca and Varg.
Really? Orca might and probably always will be my favorite storyline. Everything she does and says, I love.
This is probably a good time to inject a nitpick that I have, and that's in the first book, the three POV characters, they all had distinct things that they were doing. Obviously, Orca was looking for her son. Varg was getting in with the Bloodsworn, and the Bloodsworn are kind of going on adventures sent by Queen Helka. And Elvar was going to Oskotrev to seek like fame and glory. But where we are right now, everybody is essentially doing what Orca was doing in the last book. Orca's still looking for her son. Varg and the Bloodsworn are looking for Vol. And Elvar, she's looking for... Who's she looking for? She's looking for somebody.
The son of the witch.
Yes. Elvar is looking for the Ulfur or the Sephiwitch's son.
Oopsa.
So they're all just looking for somebody that was taken. And it's like, yeah, you're definitely going to need like a couple of these people need to get found because you can't just have your three main characters doing the exact same story. It's just not sustainable.
I agree. I'm fine with the Brekka storyline. Like, I feel like that one's going to be kind of a long story to get finally have Orca and Brekka reunited. But we need to get some movement on Varg. Like their whole like we got to find Vol now, and then like what are they going to do after they find Vol? They're going to go find Freya. Is that the plan? But like that doesn't seem very important to the larger story as a whole. Like Freya is just like a thrall. Like, if he finds her, great. But then what? So yeah, I agree with that. I have, what do you guys think about Brekka? Do you think do you think him and Orca are going to be reunited and on the same side again? Or do you think that he's going to be like turned by Lycrifa with this time?
I don't think he's going to get turned, but it'll be a while.
Yeah, I'm debating. I don't know if he'll turn to the Raven Feeders, but what I think is going to happen is that he is going to want to join the Bloodsworn. I think he's going to really want to do that, but Orcar is going to be like, no, like we swore off that life. But there'll definitely be some tension there. But I don't know. I feel like he's going to have to die or...
Brekka?
What's that kid's... Yeah, Brekka or the kid. Who's the kid with Orca?
Bjarn.
I feel like one of those two have to die.
No chance Brekka dies. Not the 0% chance Brekka dies.
Now that we found out that he's like a double tainted, there's no way he's gonna die. They have to explore what that means, what that is, and then show his like full power, which is gonna take a couple of years to get to.
Bjarn can't die because that's what's driving Elvar's entire story right now. Like what? Because then
Leaf. I'm talking about
what are they gonna do with Oopsa?
Oh, Lif.
Lif, yeah.
Lif.
Okay. Lif, yeah, excuse me. Lif.
Oh, Lif or Brekka.
Yeah, Lif or Brekka have to die. But I almost think it's Brekka because if you think like, it'd be like one of those tragic tales because right now like Lif and Orca are bonding. And the start of the book, their families were full. But now from Leaf's point of view, his brother's died and his dad's dead. And Orca, her husband's dead. And then I think her son's going to die. And then those two are going to start their own family together. That's what I think.
I just don't see Brekka dying anytime soon. I'd be surprised. But I do think, you know, her and Lif are bonding and will continue to bond for a while as well.
Yeah, I have a tough time seeing Brekka dying. He is the main driver of Orca's story. And so, I don't know. He dies. I don't know. He dies. Everyone in the world better watch out because Orca's going to kill literally everybody.
Well, that kind of goes into another talk. Like, Zach, do you want to make that your prediction that like Brekka or Lif is going to die by the end of the book?
Yeah, I think one of them will. Or I also kind of thought too, not to backtrack on my own prediction. In the very first book, Orca's husband was like, let's try to have another kid. Brekka is lonely. He needs another sibling to help on the chores. And then she's finally like, all right, let's try for one. So I almost wonder if that's like foreshadowing of Lif being Brekka's like adopted brother or one of those other kids becoming like an adopted brother. But I almost thought that was like foreshadowing that Brekka will get like a brother or sister, you know, through this experience.
Yeah.
Okay. Before or after he dies.
I can see. I feel like that'd be like so heartbreaking that he's upset. He wants to use his powers that he has, so he goes and joins the whatever they're called, the Bloodsworn, against Orca's wishes, and then he ends up like dying. I don't know.
So what's your official prediction then?
That Brekka will die at the end of this book.
That Brekka will die at the end of this book.
Yeah.
Okay. swinging for the fences already.
There's those
hot the Zach special.
Yeah, we needed that. That's what this podcast has been missing is Zach's true feelings and predictions.
Yeah. And, I mean, up until towards the end, I was like ready for him to die. I was honestly kind of disappointed. Yeah, I was kind of disappointed.
You're rooting for it. Not only are you predicting it, you're rooting for it.
Yeah, I mean, I love this book, but Orca, like we talked about, it's the same plot line that she had in the first book, and then also she's like retracing the same steps that we've seen other characters do, like Rata's lair. It's like we already seen that before. It feels like a repeat. I think going forward, it'll be fresh now that she captured that woman, and they're gonna go meet up with the Raven feeders. And then that one, the Brekka scene, I thought that was like a really cool scene. So that made me like Brekka again when he tries to escape and he's like, I will remember you. So that made me like re-like Brekka. But for a while, I was like, I'm just ready for Brekka to die so Orca can move on to her next plot point.
Heartless.
Okay.
Brekka is a sweetheart. You son of a bitch.
Yeah. Well, I'll do my prediction next. My prediction is that, you know, we have Leek Rafa. She came back in the first book. Ulfir came back here in the second book. My prediction is we're actually going to get a third OG god is going to show up. I'm not sure which one it's going to be. It could be like Rata, like you said, BJ, like he might not be dead, but we might see him in a scene. Or it could be one of the other gods gets resurrected or something. But I think another god will be in play by the end of the book.
Going with a very broad prediction. I like it. That's actually very similar to what mine was going to be. So I'll just make mine more specific, I suppose. I think Rata is going to show up and remove Ulfur's thrall collar.
Ooh.
I think he's going to unleash Ulfur on the world. So that's the prediction I'm going with.
Would you be okay with making it like instead of him showing up and removing the collar, doing like the collar will get removed at some point?
That's fine. Either one. Rada showing up was my main prediction. I thought he was going to show up by the end of the book. But I guarantee the thrall collar will be gone by the end of this book. I'm very confident in that one.
Okay.
But do you guys think we're going to see the southern part of this world where the prince is heading to before this book ends? Or do you think that's more of like a book three type of thing?
I think
the different continents battling.
You're talking about Iskalt Island or whatever?
Yeah, no. I don't know if we'd start seeing them and their gods here by the end of this book, or do you think that's like a book three setup?
It's not Iskalt Island, is it? It's a whole continent, I think, that Prince Yarmir's from, right?
Yep, it's a whole continent in the south.
I thought that
it seems
was,
like it's like a book three type of a thing, because they've alluded to that they have their own gods.
Yeah. I would say book three. Yeah. I think they're going to catch up with Prince Yarmir before he sails off with Vol. Or maybe they won't. Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll just miss him or something. But yeah, it does seem like a book three thing to me.
So Leek Rafa is heading to Iskalt Island. And then this is the other larger continent than Vigrio. Or
yeah.
Vithrio.
Yep.
Vigrith. Okay.
Vigorous, mm-hmm. Sorry. I think we'll definitely see Iskalt Island this time, but yeah, I don't think we're gonna see the continent. I think that is probably book three or four. Even that might even be like a separate trilogy or something, because it seems like there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, well, yeah, we don't really know the scope of this story yet. It can still go in so many ways. Like how many books is this gonna be? You know. Is this a trilogy series? Oh, it's supposed to be a trilogy.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, then, geez.
Is it?
Yeah. If we're gonna see that other country, maybe it would be like a spin-off series.
Dang, that's really disappointing. There's only one left.
I feel like there's so much meat on this bone. Even if this is a trilogy, it seems like we'll know. Like we'll get more books. I would say probably when this is done.
Yeah, if it's only a trilogy, there will be a spinoff or a prequel or a sequel or something of some kind.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
It's called the Bloodsworn trilogy. That's like the name of this book series. Oh, okay. The Bloodsworn.
Okay.
Well, okay.
Do you guys want to do any surprises quick? Because I had one surprise I wanted to talk about, and that was just that, you know, the cover of this book is Ulfir. and you kind of know, even if you read the synopsis, it's like there's a plot to bring back Ulfir, and then it happens within the first like 1/8 of this book. I was just surprised that that happened so quick. I thought that was going to be more the point of the second book rather than the start off of it. So that surprised me a bit.
I agree with that. I'm glad they did it though. Because that's the whole first book is like you kind of knew that Lycrifo was going to come back. So you're just waiting for that to happen. So I'm glad they're just like, this happened. Now let's do the rest of the story. So I was a fan of the pacing with all of that.
Yeah, I would too. Because I mean, I didn't read like the synopsis of the book, but just the cover, I'm like, oh, spoiler alert for the book. Another god comes back. So I am glad that it happened right away, but I wasn't like stressed when there's like, I wonder if we can bring this god back. It's like, I can kind of tell that they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was also a little bit surprised. I think we kind of touched this already, but I was surprised that we spent so much time in Rodded's chamber again. I think Zacho just talked about this, but like Orca goes back there and we spend so much time fighting the Raven Feeders and torturing Merc and interrogating Merc. And it's just like, we got so much that last book. It was weird to go back there and spend so much time there. It seemed like a plot device or like a plot filler, but I was a bit surprised and I guess nitpicking on that.
Yeah. I'm guessing it's probably like what you said, probably to set up for the fact for him to return, just to keep on reminding us about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are you guys most excited about for the second half? I know we kind of did predictions and what surprises this first half, but what are you excited about for the second half?
Lycrafa's plan. I want to see what she's going to do.
Yeah.
How's she going to make a move? You know, she really hasn't done anything yet. So I'd like to see that.
And she's had 300 years to plan it too. So whatever her plan is going to be pretty good.
Yep. Excited for some of these reunions coming up, hopefully.
Yeah. I cannot wait for Guthfar and Varg to meet. I cannot wait for whatever Varg is going to unleash on him. And then Merc and Varg. I hope all three of them meet at the same time. Yeah. And it's just like a love triangle of death. So,
well, you know, Guthfar is being saved for Lith.
True. That's right. Wow.
I want to say that Varg and Guthfar did meet. And Varg was like, I got to tell you, Lith's coming after you. And Guthfar's like,
true.
Lith?
That dweeb. I'm hoping Lyft by the end of this book is like a complete badass though. And like just demolish.
Yeah, I think he will be.
I think so too. He's learning how to use a shield, so that'll come back around, I'm sure. It'll save him.
Zach, shouldn't the thing you're most excited for be Brekka's death?
No. I mean, honestly, not since he got beaten up. That scene, I really like that scene.
Dude, you are brutal.
Not to see him again beat up, but just how resilient he was. And when the guy was just like, remember my name, he's like, trust me, I will. I thought that was like really cool. You could really see his parents in him. Like, it made me like really like him in that moment. I didn't like that he's getting beaten up, just the fact that he was so resilient to it.
Fair enough.
That made me be like, all right, like, hell yeah, come on, Orca, like, actually go save him. But yeah, I think that was like my biggest thing with Orca, especially like Varg too. It's like, to be honest, like, I do not really care about who killed his sister because we have not met his sister before.
I don't either.
So it's kind of like I'm kind of tired of it. So I'm glad that it seems like his plot line is going to focus on catching the prince, because I think that's really cool. That's something that I'm excited about, is the prince from the south. And didn't they say too, I was kind of confused, the prince, his men, they have darker skin, but it also like changes colors.
So that was that right? You're talking
not
about
not the princes, but there's people thrall. From his country that do.
Yeah, there was a thrall in the market that had like jet ink black skin, and they're like, oh, that's actually a race of people that their skin changes with the light, and so if it's light out, they're dark. If it's not light, they're light. It's really weird.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was really cool, and also too, I thought the Froya magic was really cool, because like that Froya tree, like they made like magical staffs out of those like Froya trees. I thought that was really cool too.
It had some real shard blade vibes to it, where they used like a dead Froa spirit to make the staff.
Yeah,
so it's like still its mind is still in there, but they use it to manipulate magic. So
yeah, I thought that was cool. I did have one more question for you guys, or another one. Right away we saw that Elvar, when she put the thrall collar on the winged god. She's kind of explaining the rules. She's like, if you disobey me, like, it'll burn. If you kill me, that thing was going to, like, burn, like, for eternity, you know, and you won't be able to escape it, so you better not even try to kill me. Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Varg, wasn't he, like, collared up when he killed his master?
Yes.
Like, I'm kind of confused on, like, how he escaped, because if he was collared up, wouldn't he have started to, like, burn since he killed his master?
I think the difference is that Varg's master didn't know that he was tainted and therefore didn't do any of those magical spells that you have to do to, like, to collar one of the tainted people. Because if you remember, Elvar had to say that spell for both Ulfir and Ulfir's daughter, that, like, harpy chick. And she didn't have control over them until she said that spell. So he was just a regular slave. Varg was. I don't think he was a tainted slave, because obviously he didn't even know he was tainted at the time.
Also, I believe he got his thrall collar off before he attacked his owner. I believe he had the key first, took off his thrall collar, killed the owner, put his thrall collar back on so he could go into the town without, like, raising suspicion. I believe that's how it worked, but I might be wrong on that one.
He put
his thrall collar back on too. In one of these last chapters, and it was just like a keyhole, whereas I think the tainted collars, they don't have, like, keyholes. It's like magic and shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I really trust this author, so I assumed that there was a reason, but I also didn't know if it was, like, a secret that we are gonna, like, figure out later on, because I do still kind of think that he killed his sister somehow, because I don't really know. I still don't think there would be a reveal big enough where I'd care. Because, like, we got the reveal of, like, the, what's his face? The
Brack Trollbane.
Yeah. Like, when he got that name out of him, like, Trollbane, I was like, who? Like, I don't know who that is. Like, I don't really care. But then when we see him later on with Brekka, torturing Brekka, I'm like, oh, okay. Like, that's that guy. Like, so that part was kind of cool. But just, like, that first name drop, I was like, you could tell me whoever you want, and I don't really know who that is.
Yeah, I mean, clearly Freya is going to be one of the children that's a raven feeder, and she's going to be a dragonborn or a tainted of some kind, and they're going to come back together. So she'll be valuable eventually, but right now it's just like, either find her or don't. Let's get this over with. My God.
Yeah.
So, all right. Last thing here, we have to announce an MVP of the first half. That's not very traditional in sports to do a first half MVP, but we're going to do it anyways. So, who won this first half for you?
First thing that popped into my head was Elvar. She is now the leader of the Battle Grim. She has collared two gods, and is just generally pretty OP, like Zach said earlier. So she's doing well right now.
That was going to be mine as well. You can't really beat having two gods, but I'll say Ilska, because things are kind of going according to her plan. It does seem like she's starting to lose a little bit of grip on Lickrifa, and Lickrifa is just kind of doing whatever she wants, but Ilska did have a plan set up to accomplish that plan, and did, and is continuing to do that. So I'll give her the win on this one.
Yep. I agree with both your guys' picks. Elvar was definitely going to be mine. But just to be different, I'll say the prince.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yep, because he's heading back to the king, back in his country. He says that he took, like, some of, like, the most valuable bones and treasures back. Seems like he has a head start. He has some powerful warriors around him. I mean, they're sending, like, Varg to go get him. So I think he'll be good. So for this first half, I think he might have, like, more stuff to even rival the other gods, potentially. I don't know what they're cooking up down south, but he seemed happy enough to piss off the queen of the north, essentially.
Oh, you know what? I bet Radha and him are teamed up. That's my new prediction. Ooh. Radha and Jaromir are on a team. But anyways, that's besides the point. All right. Well, that's everything for Hunger of the Gods Part 1. We will be back to cover part two, which is going to be page 321 and on. So if you're enjoying this, you know, give us a follow, subscribe, whatever, rate us, review us, whatever you need to do. But we hope you'll come back for the next episode. For now, this was Knights of the Hardcover.